I never promised you a rose garden.
For decades here on WGN, you would hear the great Jim Fizell featured with Orion Samuelson and Max Armstrong on our noontime farm show, agriculture shows, talking about how to take care of your rose gardens and gardens in general. Anything that grew. Jim is a nationally known horticulture consultant and expert to this day. And Jim, it's an honor to have you back with us on WGN. How are you, my friend?
Well, I'm good, Dan. It's been a long time since we visited. It's nice to get together with you.
I gotta say, no matter how many years go by, you sound exactly the same.
Uh-oh.
That's a good thing.
Well, it's Orion. I'm trying to catch him, and he and I just keep rolling along. That's here like the surf on the seashore.
Well, I'll tell you what, as long as you're both delivering with such energy, why not? It's great to talk to you, and I thought that this would be a good Sunday to, you know, people's gardens are, for the most part, up and running.
Finally, right.
Yeah,
exactly.
Finally, with all this weather, I thought we'd open up the phone lines, take some questions for you, as always. With all of this weather, the chillier weather that we've had and all this rainy weather, what kinds of problems might gardeners have this year?
Well, we are having problems with everything being late. Also, with the amount of moisture that we had, it was just terrible trying to get in. The farmers aren't the only ones that have had trouble getting in, and a lot of us have had flooded yards and flooded gardens, just too wet to do anything. But finally, we've had a few days when we could get things done. I know out in the farm fields, the farmers have gotten some things done. But the other thing that's interesting, you know, we keep track of the degree days, and these are crop degree days. But if you're north of about the line from Champaign over to the Mississippi River, our temperatures have been running below normal. We've accumulated fewer degree days than we should have, and from there south, they're above normal, so they're ahead. But even at that, where they're ahead down there, they couldn't get planted because it was too wet. So anyway, let's just hope that the weather warms up. It looks like this coming week we're going to get some temperatures that are about normal, or right, maybe slightly above for once, especially in this area.
Now, will people experience any kind of special problems because of excessively moist ground?
Well, we're having some problems, definitely. We've had a lot of plant material that drowned, things that were planted early that subsequently got flooded. A lot of that stuff has drowned, and people, right, have had to do some replanting. We also have a real problem with foliar diseases. When we've had as much moisture as we've had, a lot of plants that get foliar diseases are showing them at this time. Generally, when that happens, those leaves will, they're going to die off, and they will be dropped in many cases. But if the weather dries out, a lot of these plants will recover and make normal leaves. For instance, there's a sycamore. I can see it out of my office. That sycamore just now is beginning to get some leaves on it, not because it didn't try, but because it gets a disease called sycamore anthracnose that kills them as they open. Now that we're beginning to get a little bit warmer weather, drier weather, those trees are actually beginning to make leaves now, and they may, if we don't get a lot more moisture and cool weather, may go ahead and fully foliate for the rest of the season. That's normally the progress of these kinds of trees. But there are a lot of other plant materials that suffer from leaf spots. You know, the ivy on the walls down there at Wrigley, that Boston ivy, that's one that gets leaf spot really severely. And I know that the guys down there, as soon as they get wet weather like this and the leaves begin to come out, they get the fungicides out and begin covering those things to protect them. Because we want to see green along those walls.
Right, right. I tried to copy that and grow some fern, ivy rather, in my yard, and I must have gotten that because it was a complete disaster and failure several years ago. I've switched. I'm going to start the questions off with one that I have with some beautiful clematis plants that I love. I have three of them. Two of them are doing beautifully and climbing like crazy and getting ready to flower, I can tell. One of them just is not doing anything. Same kind of soil, same kind of treatment, same everything. What might be going on there?
Well, is it, has it started to grow at all, or is it just not coming back from winter?
Yeah, kind of. Well, it's a little bit, but it's just interesting to me that two of them are thriving and one of them is just like barely hanging on. I'm worried about it.
Well, several things could happen. You know, even though we think they're planted in similar soils, there could be a difference in drainage, could be a difference in soil, something could be buried under there. That's one possibility. Also, there's a lot of differences in cultivars, varieties. Mm. Some of them tolerate our conditions better than others. Mm. Also, there are some stem rot diseases that will affect clematis. It may be that that particular plant has a stem rot disease, and it will affect it. It'll actually kill some of the stems off, but if you inspect the ones that are beginning to decline, you'll usually find an area on them where it's discolored, the stem is discolored, it may even be shrunken. That's one of the common problems with clematis. The other thing is they're very sensitive to soil pH. If you have one of your plants that happens to be growing in an area where the pH is very high because there's limestone buried or gravel buried or a chunk of concrete that was down there. Yeah. Now, that could affect the way it grows. The only way to find out is to examine the plant. My suspicion is that it's below ground. That's generally what we see. You might want to dig around it and see if there's something down there. If it's above ground, you're going to see the evidence on the stems, as I mentioned.
Right. So if it's something below, I need to get in there and try to dig it out?
Yeah, the best way to find out what's going on is to take a look, and you have to dig down to find. You know, you can't witch for problems on plants like you can witch for water.
Right.
You have to do some digging.
All right, I'll do that. In the meantime, here is Kate, 312-981-7200. You're on WGN with Jim Fizell.
Hello, everyone. I'm so thrilled to talk to you, Jim. When I was growing up, in Chicago, my dad would have your reports on all the time, and I really think I absorbed that and subconsciously because I was very young, and I just turned out to love gardening and trees and planting in the woods and everything. So thank you for that.
Well, I'm glad. That's nice to hear because we talk year after year wondering whether people listen, and I know they do, but to hear somebody say, well, you influence what I'm doing, and I'm glad of that. That's why we're here.
I'm with you on that, Kate. I'm with you on that. Jim is the best.
Thanks. Yeah, wonderful. So thank you, really. Now, my old climbing roses thrived at the very beginning of the summer, maybe, you know, mid-May or so. Big, thick, lush bush, a very thick bush, nothing climbing. The leaves were yellow, so I figured too much water, naturally. But there were so many blooms, and they all bloomed so beautifully. The last 10 days, 2 weeks, the blooms, somebody turned the switch off. They're just all drying up. In the meantime, the shooters, the climbers, literally have shot up almost overnight, some of them. And they're very tall, I would say 5 feet, no bud, none. What do I do?
Well, a couple of things. Usually, climbing roses are not grafted, although that could be the case where you have a variety that's been grafted onto a rootstock. You need to make sure that the leaves that are on these canes that have come up are like the leaves on the canes that have flowered. If they're not, you cut them off because they're coming from the rootstock. Now, the other thing that's happened, we've had a lot of plant material that's very vigorous because of the amount of moisture, and some of them where we fertilize them are just making tremendous amounts of growth. If they do that, they're not going to stop to have a family. They're busy having fun growing. So the best thing to do with them is to wait till they harden off a little bit, and usually when that happens, they will make flower buds and will bloom for you. Now, if these are the climbing roses that generally bloom all year long, that's what will happen. They'll eventually make some buds and flower for you. So it's just a matter of waiting or checking to make sure that what you're growing is actually the variety that you expect it to be. So you need to do a little checking on that and see what's happening. It's not a disease problem. My guess is that you've got some rootstock that's growing in there, and it's a weed because it's not supposed to be the part that's growing. The top part that's growing is supposed to be the part that was grafted on. So we need to check on that.
Kate, good luck with all of that. We appreciate your call. We'll be back with more with Jim Fizell right after this. WGN today, horticulture consultant and expert, and you on the phones at 312-981-7200. Jim, we've got a bunch of texters with some questions. The 630 area code asking, I've got a 10-year-old wisteria that has never bloomed. It's in a fairly sunny spot. What should I do?
10-year-old wisteria, it's a baby.
Really?
Yeah, especially if it's, you know, it could be very vigorous, but they make huge vines. And I know that a lot of people have tried to grow them. Sometimes you can get them to flower very early. You do that by keeping the nitrogen away from them. But if you plant them out in our regular soils here, which are pretty fertile, they're going to be anxious to grow instead of making flowers. But that's another situation. If those plants are going to flower, there's no question about it. But they can get huge. I know when I was a kid, we had one that covered the whole front of a great big house in Pasadena, California.
Yeah.
It was 30 feet wide and went up to the second story, so it was probably 15 feet tall. That's a mature one. The little ones are the ones that are 10 years old that are maybe 8 feet tall or something like that. But they'll flower. It's just a matter of time. If it's in a pretty good sunny location, that helps because it will generate excess carbohydrate in the storage system, which is what makes it flower. One thing you don't want to do not fertilize it. If you're going to put nitrogen fertilizer on it, you're going to tell it, look, buddy, I want you to make leaves, and it'll make leaves, but they're going to be at the expense of the flowers.
Okay. All right. That's good to know. Here's Joanne from Wheaton. You're on WGN with Jim Fizell.
Hi.
Hi, Joanne.
I have a hydrangea question. Thank you for taking my call. I have planted 2 years ago 4 hydrangeas in my front courtyard, and the first year, small blooms. The second year, no blooms. And this year, they're full of bloom. And the only thing that I did differently last year was put cocoa bean mulch down. Would that affect them? I haven't done it this year.
Well, cocoa bean mulch, actually, it is an organic mulch, and the organisms in the soil will decompose it, but they take nitrogen out of the soil to do that. I don't think that had any effect on how the plant bloomed. It's interesting. Those plants, I'm not sure which one you have. Some bloom on old wood, which means the wood that was produced the previous year. Some bloom on current wood, which means the green shoots that are coming out from the old stuff eventually make flowers. And there are some that will bloom on both. Now, part of the problem is if you have one or the other kind of that and you prune it at the wrong time, you're going to take the flower buds off. So you don't want to prune it any time late in the season. In fact, some of these, if you prune them in the wintertime, you're taking all the flower buds off. So you need to find out for sure which kind it is, the one that blooms on old wood or the one that blooms on new wood, then and treat it accordingly.
Okay, great.
Thank you for the call.
I was curious about the cocoa bean. That's all.
Yeah.
No, that had no effect on it.
Thanks
okay.
for that.
All right, great.
Thank you, Joanne. Jim, when we come back from the break, I want to ask you about what we should be doing with our tomato plants that everybody is putting out in the backyard. We'll talk more with horticulture expert Jim Fizell after a quick break. WGN.
I'd like to be under the sea in an octopus's garden. In the shade.
Well, I don't know about an octopus's garden, but I know that Jim Fizell has helped Chicagoans for decades take care of their gardens here on WGN. On Orion and Max's farm shows, heard for years here on WGN. Today, Jim joins us to answer your questions about all things growing. Jim, the president of James A. Fizell and Associates, is a horticulture consultant and expert, and we are very happy to have him with us here today. Jim, just by judging when you go to the the stores that sell plants, the home and garden centers, tomato plants are everywhere. I'm guessing that's probably the most popular thing for the average person to grow in their yard. Is there anything special that people should do?
It's easy and it's productive, and that's why there's so many people growing them.
And delicious.
You know, they pretty well grow themselves, but you do have to put them in a place where they're going to get as much full sunlight as you can get. You need to be sure that there's some pretty good drainage. Fertilizer needs to be put down before they begin growing, and you don't want to use too much fertilizer particularly, I talk about nitrogen a lot because it makes the plants grow, but it doesn't necessarily help them set fruit. And the other thing you need to watch out for, there are some bugs that will come in that will work on them, particularly aphids. Aphids seem to like them. And you need to check your garden. I check my plants at least once a day, looking fairly carefully to find out what's going on. If you begin to see aphids growing on your tomato plant, don't run out and get the sprayer. Snip the little branch off and throw it in the trash, and that will solve your problem.
How would you know that you have aphids? What do they look like?
Well, it's a little tiny, normally green insect. They don't move very fast, but they'll begin to cluster on the stem. They'll look kind of a whitish green. If you bother them, they'll wiggle a little bit. They don't really fall off. They occasionally will have wings, but not normally. But they suck the sap out of the shoot tips. They normally get on the shoot tip as it's growing. They may be hidden in the leaves. But if you take a close look, you'll see that that stem looks a little bit peculiar because of the stuff on it. And if that's the case, look in the end. Actually, if you squeeze them, they normally, if you pinch them and squash them, they normally have red inside them, so you'll have a little bit of that. But anyway, it is an insect that will, if you don't control the thing, will actually take the plant over, essentially, because they just reproduce and reproduce. So we're having a little bit of problem with that. The other thing you need to do, if you're watering these plants, be sure that you water the plant, water the soil, not the plant itself. You want them to dry off before nightfall if you can do that. Of course, if we have rain like we've been having lately, you're kind of at the mercy of that. But if you have a chance to allow those plants to dry off before nightfall, you're going to solve a lot of the disease problems. We talked about foliar diseases. They can get tomato plants as well. Other than that, stake them up to keep them off the ground if you can. Use tomato cages. That keeps the plants clean. It keeps the fruit clean. And let them do their thing.
Again, like I was saying before, but with my clematis, I think I've been mispronouncing it all my life. How do you say it? Clematis?
Clematis.
Clematis is the correct way to say it. With my tomato plants, I have several, and all but one of them are doing spectacularly. Same soil, same treatment, same everything.
Yeah. Well, again, it could, if they're all the same varieties, they ought to be growing the same. But I have the same thing in my backyard here, where my tomato plants are. Every once in a while, you'll get one that just doesn't want to get going. Eventually, right. It will.
Yeah, I call it the runt of my litter.
Well, yeah, that could be. Also, you know, there's an advantage to that. If it's slow getting started, it's going to be slow producing. And after all the others are done, maybe it's going to come into its own.
Oh, very
you
nice.
Never know.
Yeah, get some late fruit there. Here's Tony in Racine, Wisconsin, that we were just talking about.
Yes, I am calling from Racine. Come on up sometime. There's lots to show off.
It's a beautiful city. I love Racine. Do you have a question for Jim?
Yes, I do. Jim, thanks for taking my call. And I have shrubs in the front of my house that are kind of overgrown. My thought is to redo some landscaping. I have a tall cedar tree that's higher than the house. And what kind of success with the cedar and the overgrown shrubs might I have if I severely cut them back? Is it possible I might induce some new growth? Or is it better just to get rid of them and start over again? They're over 40 years old.
Well, maybe it's the best thing to get rid of them, but that isn't absolutely necessary. You can prune them, but you don't just chop the daylights out of them. You have to take them down gradually so that you leave green, and that's needles or leaves, on the stems each time you cut them back. If you don't leave a stem with green on it, it's not going to grow again. So they can be taken back. In fact, I've seen some people that have taken back some of the big spreading yews that are 20 feet tall and taken them back down to reasonable size, 3 or 4 feet tall, but it takes maybe a decade to do it. I don't think you want to wait that long.
Maybe no, don't want to wait that long, but I just thought maybe if there was a possibility of starting some trimming, you know, that maybe it would induce some new growth.
Right. It will do that. As soon as you open up the canopy on those things and take it back, you'll find that there are buds that are dormant. Will go ahead and grow, but you still have to have some green at the tip of the leaf. Now, you know, some of us have like challenges. My wife every once in a while says, we need to get rid of that. And I said, well, you know, I'm going to play with it, see if we can't resurrect that thing. And sometimes she wins, sometimes I win. But it can be done. But for those of us who like the challenges in gardening, it's a challenge to take a plant like that and get it back to where it's an attractive asset to the property instead of an overgrown mess.
Yeah, I got to tell you, when I had zero gardening experience prior to owning my first house, and really my intention was just to get things down to a bare minimum, easy maintenance as possible, and I have fallen in love with gardening. It's so relaxing, and Jim, as you're saying, like, you know, experimenting with different things and, you know, getting you do something and getting a result from it, very, very gratifying.
It is. I didn't mean to infer that Jane doesn't like plants. She likes plants, but sometimes she's a little more impatient than I am. But there are other cases where, in fact, she was a houseplant nut before I ever met her, and we don't have many now because we don't stay home enough. But anyway, everybody likes gardening if they can get into it the right way. You know, one of the things that's a big disappointment is for people to start gardening with all good ideas and all good intentions and then to stop because something adverse happens. And one of the most common things to happen is the garden gets taken over by weeds.
Right.
They are the number one cause of people giving up on gardening.
Wow.
So you need to get onto them as soon as you see them. You pull them out or you hoe them out,
right,
and get them under control so that your garden can go in and grow. That's another reason for going out essentially daily and walking the rows. And when you walk your rows, take your garden hoe with you. Keep it nice and sharp. And when you see one of those little rascals, cut it out of there and get rid of it before it does any damage to you and gets a head start.
Yeah, before it takes over. Tony, thank you for the call. This is Linda from Arlington Heights. You're on WGN.
Thank you for taking my call. I am struggling with extreme deadwood damage on bushes and shrubs. Specifically, suffered a great deal of damage on the boxwood hedge, which is on the north side of my property. Half of it is, I would say, brown orange, and I also have extreme loss of plant material on the barberries and hibiscus. But my primary question is, what to do on the boxwood? How can we rehabilitate the boxwood on the short term, and what do we do for the long term?
Okay, boxwood is marginally hardy here, but there are different varieties. Some are more hardy than others. Also, it depends on how the plant was growing. If it was good and vigorous and did the proper hardening off for winter time, it probably survived. If it was short on nutrients or not very healthy, it probably did not survive. And by surviving, I mean they do not tolerate the 25 to 28 degree below zero readings that we had this past winter. Very commonly, it will kill the boxwood outright, and it has done that. Now, it may be a selective number of plants within your plant, or maybe just the peripheral of the plants. If it's just the periphery, you can rejuvenate those things. Wait until they've begun to grow from down below, then cut off all the dead wood, cut off all of that stuff that's turned yellow or brown, and let the plant regrow. These plants, if they are of any age whatsoever, they're going to have pretty substantial root systems. And granted, when you lose the top, you're going to lose some of the roots, but the basis is there, so they should regrow pretty nicely. It's the same thing with the barberry and some of these other plants that were killed back by the winter. The other thing you might do, if you know what kind of plant was planted, what the actual variety of that boxwood was, you can check on that and find out if it's one of the hardier varieties. I don't have that right in front of me, and I don't try to keep track of that kind of information, but many of the nurseries do. And if you go around through the neighborhoods looking at boxwood, you're going to find some that's absolutely dead or mostly dead, and you're going to find some that it makes you wonder if there ever was a winter because it's so gorgeous. So there are differences.
Linda, thank you for your call. Jim will come back with more questions on our text line, on our phone line. Somebody asking about organic fertilizers. We'll get to that next. WGN consulting horticulturist, the great Jim Fazell, back with us on WGN to answer your questions. 312-981-7200 to call or text. Jim, Maria on our text line says, I moved my peonies 2 years ago, but they haven't flowered since. Did I do something wrong?
Well, it depends on whether you planted them too deeply or not. If you plant them too deeply, they do not flower very well. That would be my guess. Not an awful lot of other things that might have happened unless the flower buds are being cut off by something in the spring. But, if you plant them too deeply, they will eventually grow out of that. But those little roots or that rhizome that you plant needs to be right at the soil surface so that the little pink buds on it are essentially above surface, then they'll go ahead and grow and will make flowers for you. That's the only thing I know of with peonies, because they are so faithful that normally no one has any problem with them. The only problem I've ever had, as I mentioned, is planting them too deeply.
Yeah, or that there are too many of them because they're so prolific.
Right.
The 630 area code is asking, what's your feeling about the use of organic fertilizer versus traditional?
Well, you know, it's a personal choice. Actually, the materials, once they get onto the soil, are very quickly attacked by soil organisms. And it doesn't matter whether it's an inorganic form or an organic form. The organisms down there are going to convert it into a form that they can use, and they do it very quickly. Now, the organic materials contain the nitrogen, which is usually what we're concerned with, the nitrogen in a form that's tied up in proteins that consists of amino acids, which are made up of nitrogen compounds, and the organisms will break that down to get the nitrogen out. That's what they need to live on. When they do that, they break down more than what they actually need, which allows the release of some of that material for other plants to use. They scavenge what the organisms in the soil have left over, and then it becomes the protein in that plant again. With the inorganic materials, like ammonium nitrate or some of those things, they are dissolved into water, with water into a soluble form, which these organisms can take very quickly. They take it in and they grow prolifically on that, making proteins out of it. Of course, then when these organisms that are in the soil have digested whatever they're digesting and they've grown, they eventually die off and they release what they ingested back into organic material, which is picked up by other organisms. So it's a cycle. And okay, where you start the cycle or where you begin with the amount of stuff that you put on really doesn't make a lot of difference to those organisms, but they're personal preferences. The people that want to use something that's so-called natural are right, going to use organic materials that are actually plant-derived one way or another, possibly animal-derived as manures or something like that, and their result is going to be just a little bit delayed, but the same nonetheless.
Okay, good advice there, so people can make their own choice with that. Jim, I can't tell you how great it is to hear your voice, to hear your enthusiasm. It's wonderful to talk to you again, and I hope we can do it again very soon. Jim Fazell's president of James A. Fazell and Associates Limited. You do consulting horticulture work still for people all over the country. I'm glad to hear that you're busy and happy, and all of our best to you and your whole family.
Well, thank you, Dean. It's always good to visit with you. I always enjoy it. When we see you out in the neighborhoods, we always like to visit just a little bit, knowing that you're out doing the things that you do as well. And thank you for what you do.
All right, buddy. We'll talk to you soon. There's the great Jim Fazell. We'll wrap things up. Get ready for White Sox pregame coming up next. WGN.